ground control to Major Tom.
Staunton wriggling his way to the post and right on the post. There are three there. It must be a try. Yes, it is. A second try for John Kelly. Now it's all there for the taking as Gloucester pick themselves up from underneath their own post. Tom.
Ground control to Major Tom.
This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try!
Check ignition.
Fully controlled, oh, straight on! Now there will be no greater place in Munster history than the one reserved for the man who scores the special individual try.
Tom Savage of Three Red Kings. Tom, an excellent performance by Ireland in the second test. We really, really, the key areas we identified that Ireland would have to improve in, they did improve. They were extremely efficient at the breakdown. Some of the clearing out was just nothing short of phenomenal, giving Pocock and Hooper no chance to get near that ball. An excellent performance from start to finish, Tom.
It really was. That was as good as I've seen Ireland play in. It's not quite at Twickenham on St. Patrick's Day level, but it's close enough. Ireland were just unbelievably physical. I wrote there in my column for the Evening Echo there on Saturday that Ireland before used to be able to kind of put up a bit of a plucky fight and try and run the big teams close, but we always kind of fell away under their physicality, their conditioning, their efficiency. And to see Ireland essentially doing that to a very good Australian side, I mean, you know, a lot of the commentary I've seen in the aftermatch just seems that to kind of write off a little bit what Australia were able to do. Ireland played very well here and just physically took Australia to the cleaners for most of this game. Given how Ireland finished the first test, playing a little bit loose, playing a little bit wide, everything was a little bit rushed. This game was kind of the opposite in that Ireland were just able to just out-muscle and just submit Australia. The only thing that was missing was the finishing touch. We need to get to that. There was a few opportunities they coughed up. But other than that, Ireland were absolutely astounding here, I thought. Like you said there, the physicality at the ruck was unbelievable. I did a highlight package today on my site just looking at the amount of times that Ireland just absolutely obliterated Hooper and Pocock off the ball at the ruck. It really was just a superb performance from Ireland. And I think it's just one of those ones where they'll be looking to finish a job next week because, you know, there's no point in hooping and hollering too much about a series being tied 1-1. But they have a big chance next weekend to wrap up the whole thing in Sydney. And it really was just something really, really good to see an Ireland side, you know, coming back at an opposition like that in the manner that they did, where they took out all the frustrations of the week before on Australia over the ball. I thought it was very good.
Speaking of frustrations, Tom, Australia frustrated with what was described as a king hit on Will Genia. Yeah. I watched this back, Tom. Mother of God. You know, if it had barely win a free kick in a soccer match, I don't know what the big fuss was. Granted, Will Genia fell and broke his arm as a result of it, but it wasn't like Cian Healy got him in an arm lock. He didn't go full Ross Moriarty on him and put him in an arm bar. Like it was innocuous enough. And like I said, it would hardly have warranted a free in soccer. Never mind in rugby. I don't see what the big fuss was there.
Very strange. Look, I understand it to a small bit. Australia are unhappy that one of their key guys is out for the next test. That sucks for them. When I heard Michael Checa talking about Cian Healy, you know, doing a king hit, I think I've heard this before on the news. When I was down in New Zealand, they were talking about this as well. About it's basically like you're walking behind somebody and you clout him in the head, and they didn't see it, a bit like a sucker punch. When he was talking about that, about the king hit, I was like, geez,
I was wait. I was waiting for the sighting commissioner. I was waiting for some video that was gonna that I was gonna watch and go, "Oh Jesus, Keane, what have you done?" And then when I actually saw the clip in question, I thought, "Are you actually serious?" It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, because he described it as one where they had Michael Hooper going down the blind side of the lineout, and they had Genia running a decoy line off the back of it. And I was like, "Okay, I found this bit." And then I see Will Genia running into Keane Healy, and I'm just like, well, that can't be it, because he's literally just after running into Keane Healy and after falling over. I mean, not a king hit by any stretch of the imagination, as I would define it, you know, from what I remember when I was down there, what people were talking about with regards to king hit. And then to see, like, that actually was what he was talking about, it's just laughable. Like, it really is. It's just, I get they're upset, but, like, as in, like, that wasn't even worthy of a penalty, let alone a sighting. But it was one of those things where he was talking about how, oh, well, Australia, we're not going to cite this. But it's like, well, why are you bringing it up then? Like, either cite it yourself or say nothing. Because I think the reason why he was saying it was is to kind of go, well, you know, our boy was done wrong. He was taken out by Keane Healy and he's out of the next test. And, you know, we don't like that. It's just, if it's citable, cite it. If it's not, don't mention it. If he ran into a fella on a decoy line, take it that it happens. It's rugby. It's a pity, but you know, I'm not sure how it's Keane Healy's problem. If a scrum half is running around the back, Keane Healy turns around, your man runs into him. I'm not sure what they expected to happen out of that. It was a weird one.
Yeah, I can't really see the headlines shock as rugby players collide. It doesn't really seem to grab the imagination for me, or you know, as far as I'd be concerned anyway. Another bit of Australian whining, I suppose, during the week in the aftermath of the game was Ireland's tactics around Folau's chase with regards to the aerial game and how that he might have been impeded on a few occasions. Again, probably clever from Ireland if they can do it and get away with it. But, you know, the referees there, the linesmen, or sorry, the referees' assistants are there, and the TMO is there. And I'd also point out to you, just harking back to the last point, that, you know, World Rugby haven't exactly covered themselves in glory with regards to the citing process and the disciplinary process later. So Keane Healy mightn't be out of the woods yet.
Oh, I think technically he is out of the woods because it's been 48 hours since. But with regards to the problem with Folau, look, I saw the thing that they were talking about. That's just running a subtle blocking line. Every team in World Rugby does it. Ireland didn't do it at all well in the first test. Let them have their own way. And like, it's not even really cheating. It's just like you're just running a line that will make sure that the guy who's chasing after it cannot have a straight direct attack line onto the ball. Has to weave around, which makes him a bit slower, and which means that he's not on the optimal line to read the, you know, the ball as it's coming down. You know, simple as that. Ireland did very well, subtly. And look, and to be honest, Australia didn't even kick very well. So it's like, it's not like that this is, you know, some massive scandal with regards to some, you know, nefarious plan that Joe Schmidt cooked up. Ireland just defended, kicked better than what they did in the first test, and Australia kicked slightly worse. Nothing more than that, but it's a good sign generally when you see an Australian team whinging in the press after a loss. Generally is a good sign as to how they felt the previous game went, and I would expect to see some changes in the team sheet coming up this week for him.
Yeah, Nick Phipps will be one of those, so he will. Tom, are you expecting more of the same from Ireland, to just go out and repeat the dose, or at least try to go out and repeat that dose? Hard to argue with the tactics in Melbourne at the weekend.
No, look, Ireland have stumbled on the game plan here. Well, this was always the game plan. There was going to be a bit of experimentation in the first test. Ireland have come across the means by which that they can attack this Australian side. We were speaking about it last week, that Ireland needed to add more ball carriers to the pack. When we do that, we're an incredibly difficult team to defend. You can defend, but can you defend for the full 80 minutes? When you have a lad like Tadhg Furlong, who is just an unbelievable physical specimen. You know, he's a lad, he's 19 and a half stone, 6'1", 6'2", running around the place, like, you know, with the speed of an outside centre. Like, he's unbelievably physical to the point where that, you know, that descriptor barely even does it justice to the kind of stuff that he can do in a rugby field. At the moment, for me, he's the best tight head prop on the planet. If he continues this form for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, which is not unheard of, he's yet to come into his prime, really. then we could be looking at possibly one of the best tight head props ever played a game, if he continues the way he's going. He really is a special player. And the likes of him, coupled with James Ryan, who's another special player, coupled with Peter Romani, coupled with DJ Standard, Dan Levy, Jordy Murphy coming off the bench and having a fantastic game, Akeem Healy, Niall Scannell as well, by the way, having an absolute blinder of a game. He was just so physical, everything he was doing, carrying. He was rocking like a demon as well, scrummaged so well, threw very well. The result for Ireland next week is to literally go back to the same thing that brought him to the dance here, which is just blunt force trauma. Just absolutely go after these lads and start with the ball in hand and keep up with that multi-phase pressure, and they will infringe. Like, if there was any other referee other than the referee who was there on Saturday, Australia could have had multiple people in the bin for yellow cards infringement. They were, I think they were, at one point they were giving away 6 penalties in a row, no yellow card. They were knocking the ball out of the air. They were hitting lads without the ball. There were multiple offsides as well, never called. And it's one of those ones where, okay, fair enough, like sometimes you don't get those decisions. But Ireland, from what we were doing, just physically, that's the recipe for taking on this Australian side. They're going to have to make a decision now. Are they going to continue with Pocock and Hooper? If they do, then the recipe for Ireland is exactly the same as what it was in Test 2. Hold on to the ball, run through the phases, and just wait for the lads to drop off. It happens. And if you watch this game back, I'd say Ireland left at least 10 or 15 points on the table with a bad decision here or there. And like I said, that seems like it's being disrespectful to Australia. Maybe it is. I don't mean it to be. Australia are a very good side. They're a very tough pack. But the physicality that Ireland can bring now, there's very few teams in the world that can live with it, which is astounding. I mean, sure, you and me remember when Ireland were getting beaten up, beaten on the house many times. And to have Ireland at a point now where we're probably one of the biggest and most physical packs in world rugby, you know, without question. Not even, you know, we give it a lash at home. It really is astonishing. You know, other teams used to do what we did to Australia on Saturday. And that's an astounding change for Ireland over the course of the last 20, 25 years. And if we repeat that performance on Saturday, we will win. And it's as simple as that.
Yeah, Tom, I noticed you said there that Ireland left, I thought they left at least 2 tries after them. The attacking lineout, especially inside the Australian 22, Australia had some joy in disrupting that, and I thought the Irish Maul defense could have been a bit better at times against the Australians too. So still, despite the win, plenty to work on.
Oh, and Peter Romani referred to this after the game. There was some things for them to work on. The Maul was very strange. I felt that Australia got an awful lot of time with that Maul going absolutely nowhere to hang on to the Maul and not be forced to use it. That was certainly the case with their penalty try. I thought Ireland had stopped them up twice at least for 5 seconds, which is, you know, the rule generally is then to first stop and then use. The Maul defence in that aspect will be held quite a bit by Adam Coleman being missing next week. I think he's after got a fracture of some kind to his cheekbone. That'll certainly help next week. Our Maul attack hasn't been great. I thought that Australia had defended that very well so far. And normally that's an area where they've struggled. Adam Coleman, again, is a huge part of that defence. He's a hugely physical man. He'll be missed an awful lot for them next week. And I think you'll see Ireland go back to that Maul as a way to build pressure, especially with Pascal Gauzère refereeing. I think that we have the physicality to go out there and do it. We had certainly had the accuracy. Unfortunately, there, like you said, there was one incident inside in the second half where we just received really good field position off a penalty. Niall Scannell had just gone off. Rob Herring comes on, which is always a tough position for a hooker to come in, to do a throw that close to the line. It got missed, and that was one or two of those went that way during the game where we just weren't able to convert those chances where normally we're very, very good. That'll be the thing for Ireland now next week, is to definitely get the Maul sorted, get the line out. I thought Niall Scannell was very, very good, but we just didn't get the kind of looks we like to get when we land. Our Maul setups weren't great. Now, I'm sure that's something that we look to go back to in this game, because generally when you see Ireland avoiding a facet of the game where we're normally quite good at, it's generally either a tactic or it's something we're holding in store for a different game. And I think that this is the game where you see Ireland look to really attack through them all. And especially with Adam Coleman missing, I don't think Ireland will be able to resist having a chop off when it comes to getting that driving line out going.
Tom, get off that fence and call it and tell me Ireland by how much on Saturday morning.
Well, we'll wait to see what the teams are, but I can only see at the moment if Ireland perform anywhere near where they were going in the last game, I can only see it ending up the same way, an Ireland win, hopefully more comfortable than what it ended up being in the last day. But that was probably the closest game in the scoreboard compared to how it actually was in the field that I can remember at test level in quite a while, especially between two top nations like Ireland and Australia.
Perfect, Tom. Moving on to other games from the weekend, and we saw England fall to a second defeat in as many weeks to the Springboks, and really, that's the end of their series now. They have a dead rubber on in Cape Town at the weekend, with pride really the only thing that they'll be playing for. Again, we saw England rush into I think a 12-0 lead this weekend, or a 12-3 lead at one stage, and just didn't seem to capitalize on it. They just they look like a team who've been, from a confidence point of view, who've been absolutely shattered, and like a team who don't believe in themselves and don't trust themselves.
Yeah, it was very strange for me actually, this game. I was watching it and I was thinking, we'll see a big reaction from England here now, to have a real cut off the Springboks. And when it started, I was just like, well, there you go. But then they just fell off again. And I'm not even sure, like, how they allowed it to happen. They were, attacking fairly reliably, defending fairly well. The ruck was going well for them, and then it just sort of fell apart. And it's like, I've been saying for a while that, look, England are getting a bit of a rough ride of it here, with regards to the games they've lost. There's been reasons for them. But it's now kind of looking that, a year out from the World Cup, they've got a lot of stuff they've got to figure out. If you look at the other sides, Ireland are, literally now just it's adding depth to to structures that are already there, making sure key guys get their fit. But there's a plan. You look at Wales, the same. Wales are building very, very well at the moment. They've got a lot of quality fillers coming in. They're performing very well. You look at Scotland, not really the same level. They've got a few problems, and we'll get to that in a minute. New Zealand, obviously. Australia are building a fairly serious side as well. The Springboks too. England, just a fair bit of work that they've got to do for me. Looking at some of their structures there, like once the actual game kind of settled into place, they just started losing collisions, and like as in, there was a couple of different times, even when Billy Vunipola was playing, when he was actually on the field, where he was just getting like stopped badly on the gain line, and it's like that normally doesn't happen to this guy. Same with Mako Vunipola, Jamie George, they were getting stopped up fairly handily by South Africa, and on the other side, then South Africa were just literally just winning collisions, getting good angles, and hurting them. Altitude will play a part. Ireland know that, having been there 2 years ago. But like at the same time, England will have been aware of this. It's not like they only became aware of altitude, the week before the first test and this test. Like, so I was very surprised to see their performance. They just look, like you said, they are very just lacking confidence, just lacking energy, lacking that kind of pop you want at test levels. The big fight back I was expecting started, but then it just kind of fell away. And now they're at the point where they're, questions are starting to be asked about Eddie Jones, and it's kind of like, you can't really blame those questions. He's a fairly abrasive dude to deal with, in a professional setting like that. He's got very high standards. He demands massive intensity in training. That's been a bit of a bugbear for both players and clubs, with lads getting injured, very, very long, very, very long injuries even before this tour, guys getting injured in England before he even flew out. Look, it's a tough time for them at the moment. They're going to have to find something. And Billy Vunipola has gone home with an arm injury. Mako Vunipola has gone home. A couple of other fellas as well. Ellis Genge has a knee injury. All of a sudden, they're struggling badly for ball carriers next week. If they've got to go up against this box side but by the way, and like Eddie Jones was talking about missing 25 players to injury. Springboks are missing Malcolm Marks, who's got an argument for being one of the best hookers on the planet. They're missing Lou De Jager. They're missing Eben Estevez. They're missing a few other fellas as well. Every team has got injuries. It's just, England are just, at the moment, they look like they're kind of looking for excuses. And it's like, that's never a good sign when you see a team on a losing run and nothing really seems to be going right for them.
Yeah, it certainly didn't. And look, we saw an article, we've read an article, I think it was in The Guardian this week, about some of the rumblings in the England camp and in the England setup. And there seems to be some friction there between Eddie Jones and the players. And like I think you've mentioned before, Tom, being that kind of a smart ass or being that harsh on the players is fine if you're winning, because players will put up with it when you're winning. But if you're getting hammered and you're losing, then you know players will only take so much, be they professional or not. And you get to a stage where if you've lost enough of that dressing room, or if you've lost that dressing room, it's a very, very long and lonely road back for Eddie Jones. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the RFU step in sooner rather than later with this one. It's June 2018 now. The World Cup is, if I'm correct, September 2019. So we're fast approaching 12 months to this World Cup. We have the November test window. We have the Six Nations next January, February, March. And then we have the usual kind of August World Cup warm-ups, if you will. So England are running out of road with regards to if they were to change head coach, you know, it would be probably beneficial sooner rather than later. And I think their November series is quite grueling as well, in that they have South Africa, Australia, Japan, and New Zealand all in 4 weeks. So you know, it's tough times for English rugby at the moment. Tough times for Eddie Jones, and they could be facing some very unpalatable decisions over the next, or some very tough decisions at least over the next couple of months.
Yeah, if it's a case that he actually has lost the dressing room, I think he'll be gone before the November internationals. Look, he's been a guy who, wherever he's been, lads have become unhappy. It happened with Japan, where the players were complaining about workload, and it's looking like, the rumors are that it's beginning to happen here as well. You know, and it's like I said, it's grand, and like you mentioned there, it's grand when you're winning, but when you're on a losing streak, you know, there's only so much you can take. And I think the timing with the World Cup coming up is against them. But not only that, England has to play the All Blacks in 5 months' time. Even England playing Australia at the moment in Twickenham, I back Australia. But playing the All Blacks is a different gravy. Like, if the All Blacks rock up in Twickenham and England are playing like this, that could be embarrassing at home in Twickenham. And whenever you hear about the angry soccer lads during the summer, there are no friendlies in international rugby. You lose one of those November tests badly at home to New Zealand, and P45s are usually on the way then afterwards, or whatever the English equivalent is. You know, he's going to have to be, you know, he's going to need something from that third test. Like, he actually is. Like, isn't it strange to say, like, on a summer tour, you think, okay, big development. They were talking about winning this tour 3-0, you know. So he's going to need something from that third test from the lads who are left. You know, they're going to have to show up. They're going to have to do it without some of their big players. But it's a tough place for them to be at the moment. But results, whatever way they go about them, be it the ugliest way they can possibly play, they have to get result. They have to get a result this weekend, just for the sake of their group, for the sake of the overall confidence. Because last thing you want is lads coming back into international camp in, you know, ahead of the November test, dreading it. You know, that's the last thing you want. They're going to need something this weekend. It's going to be interesting to see if they can get it.
Yeah, I can't see it, Tom. I think that they're so low on confidence. I think that the Springboks, I know the Springboks are going to be much much changed, but this is a massive carrot out there for the South Africans to go and to whitewash England, and something that they would love to do.
Oh, but the Springboks have got themselves sorted out mentally, which is a huge factor for them. They're playing a style of rugby that suits them. They've got the crowd behind them. And when the South African crowd in South Africa are behind the Springboks, they're such a tough team to beat. And plus, as well, they've got some savage ball carriers in that pack of theirs. Like, you know, Dwayne Vermeulen playing absolutely unbelievably well. You've Steve Khaleesi, an inspired choice for captain from Razzie. You know, other lads just performing just to a very, very high level. And they're just so physical. Like, the way they dominated England on the gain line there at the weekend just gone, just very physical. Like that, as in that, like that kind of play, you know, when the Springboks start playing like that, and considering the fellas they have to bring back in, they're going to be a very tough proposition for any side coming up he beat in the rugby championship or afterwards. So it'll be, again, just another very interesting to see how the South Africans approach this. There'll be a few changes, but when their confidence is so high, England's confidence is so low, relatively speaking, geez, anything could happen there.
Call it, Tom.
Oh, well, I'm going to probably go for a South African win. Usually when it comes to situations like this where atmosphere is bad, you're seeing Ed storm out of interviews, you're seeing Eddie getting cranky in interviews, you know, it's generally a sign that things aren't great. And, you know, when there's no buzz around the camp, it's so hard to get yourself up for a big game like that. Test rugby is different. You're always going to be like, for yourself, for the country, for whatever, however you play at top level, you're going to look to get fired up. But I don't know, I just saw a lot of flatness in England in the last 2 weekends. You know, can they turn it around for this one? It's possible, but gee, I haven't seen any of it out in the pitch so far. They're in a tough place right now. The Springboks are rolling. You know, it's the last game ever to be played in Newlands, from what I understand. They're going to go and really have a chop off this, I'd say. I'm probably going to go for South Africa.
Yeah, Tom, moving on to France and New Zealand, the second test of that three-match trilogy. Tom, again, France really, only for bad luck, they'd have no luck. Again, the Benjamin Fall red card. I know that he did receive a bit of a nudge on the way to contesting that ball. A really, really bad run of luck for France. And it's hard to see how they're going to turn that around. On Saturday in the third test. It really, really is.
Look, they've played well in patches. They certainly played well in this game as well. But, I mean, the fact is that they're just in a situation now where they're like unable really to get any sort of grip on a game, or they can kind of even just approach, you know, getting a bit of parity in the luck stage. You know, when they're like that, when they're in a situation where they've got no real like breaks in games, but they're still finding themselves coming quite close, that's a very difficult place to be in. And I would say that if they get 15 men in the pitch for the majority of the game here, they'll be fine. But if it's a case where they're finding themselves down to 14 for an extended period, you know, be it through yellow cards or red cards, then they'll lose, because that's what the All Blacks do when you're down a man. They just punish you. I did find it afterwards very strange that the World Rugby again rescinded Benjamin's, they rescinded his red card in the aftermath because of that push. And it just seems like they're going from bad to worse, really. You know, there was a one last week that shouldn't have been rescinded. This one, there was a fella who should have got a red card, didn't get one, and was said to be, okay, well, that's okay. And then this week, a guy got a red card. And look, unfortunate, but look, it was a red card. You know, he took the guy out in the air. So whatever about intent, you know, that's what happened. And it just seemed to be following up a dodgy decision last week with another dodgy one this week, just to sort of even things out a little bit. And it just, again, was just a kind of a disappointing thing where, you know, it's been a series of tests that's been ruined by red cards and yellow cards and cards that should have been given but weren't. And it's just, again, just very a difficult series to judge, because I think France have never been in a position to actually throw any proper shots for an extended period of time. So they'll be looking to see if they can make something happen this weekend. But, you know, I'd say they'll just be happy now just to see if they can make a good account of themselves in the last game, rebuild over the summer, because they have improved. I mean, I don't think anybody could say this, you know, France are the kind of rabble they were even, you know, maybe a year or two ago, but they certainly have improved. It's just South Africa, or New Zealand rather, is a very difficult place to go, even at the best of times. And when you've had the run of luck that they've had with yellow cards and refereeing decisions going against them, and, you know, bad luck like this Benjamin Fall thing, you know, it's just, you take what you can get and, you know, go home with whatever you can get and then hope for the best.
Yeah, you certainly do, Tom. Just to touch on that for a second, the I suppose some of the decisions from World Rugby with regards to discipline, with regards to citing, and even with some of the TMO interventions have been really baffling and really, you know, sometimes I think rugby fans can get in their high horse about, oh, we have video technology and we embrace this and we're the head of the pack when it comes to helping referees make the right decisions. But some of the stuff has just been really, really poor over the last few weeks. I bring your attention back to the Ireland Australia game and the try that was denied to Keith Earls. Initially, I thought that his foot or his ankle or his heel, rather, might have brushed off the whitewash. They seemed to be okay with that, but then seemed to rule it out for not being in control for in the process of grounding the ball. I could not see for the life of me where he lost control of that ball in the process in the act of grounding it, Tom. And again,
yeah, he got it was very weird. He got downward pressure on the actual try itself. And then lost control of the ball afterwards. It was such a strange, like, but there's been lots of strange decisions like that. You know, it's one of those, like, it is a case that, look, they do have the more inexperienced referees getting games during these summer tours because they want to up people's experience. You won't get experience unless you take big games. For me, like, there was a few dodgy decisions in this one. Some of the mall refereeing I thought was very strange, as in, not corrupt or, you know, unbelievably bad, but just inconsistent, you know, like as in, you know, Australia getting, you know, 6 or 7 second stops in the mall and being allowed to continue on. Normally that's a case of use this, you know, Ireland's mall defence I thought was quite good, but it didn't look that way because they had to defend stops for much longer than the 5 seconds that you normally do. You know, there was a couple of other kind of dodgy ones as well. It's just like inconsistency week to week is the biggest problem. And like you said, there were TMOs as well. They're coming in and it's like I don't think we're getting the best value we possibly could from the TMO at the moment. It's just that, you know, this is the sort of, like I said, a development tour for some of the referees. You know, the very top referees aren't really involved or haven't been. The likes of Jerome Garces, you know, as much as I have, you know, issues with him at times, Nigel Owens, you know, a lot of these lads are very experienced and it shows, like, and they've had some issues over the course of this summer series all the way through with refereeing, and it's just hopefully it's just one of those ones that will iron itself out, because you know how sometimes there's like directives that are brought in, like we were all wondering during that game there at the, you know, I think Reece Marshall, it was like at Munster against Cardiff, there was one where Reece Marshall was standing by the side of a ruck on a kick and he just had his hands by his side and everybody was wondering what is he doing. But there's been a referee's directive being that you have to either be shoulder bound to rucks now when you're doing a kick, but you can't block off a kick chase thing like that. And that was only revealed, I think, you know, a couple of weeks after that. It could be the case that some of the things like the mall stops and, you know, not communicating loudly about a mall being stopped, that that's a new directive they brought in. But, you know, hopefully it'll improve because, like we saw in the New Zealand games, some of those decisions, they can be game changing or they can be very high impact in a game, and you don't want referees having that much of a say, at least not as much as what they've had in some of the games so far over the summer.
Yeah, Tom, I suppose the France, New Zealand, hard to see France have any chance in that. I take it you'll be calling New Zealand to make it a 3-0 whitewash.
I'd say they're going to do the usual blackwash in the summer, I would say. And again, I think France have been much improved, but I'm not sure they'll have enough left at the end of a fairly tough season for them to go and have a cut-off New Zealand here. You know, I'd say it'll just be another handy enough New Zealand win. And they'll, you know, blood a few lads while they're at it and look as impressive, more likely.
Tom, there was some other games over the weekend. We saw Ross Moriarty's MMA debut in the Wales-Argentina game. Wales getting another win on the road in Santa Fe, if I am correct, in Argentina, yep. Which helps their world rankings as well. I think shoots them up into the top 5, if I'm correct.
They're third in the world now, I think.
Heard, there you go. You know, but I have to say that the Ross Moriarty red card was one of the most bizarre things I think I've ever seen. Right under the referee's nose or the assistant's nose, he decided to apply a chokehold on his Argentinian opponent, which warranted a deserved red card, but very, very silly nonetheless.
It was extremely unusual. Like it's, I don't think I've ever actually seen a guy try to put a sleeper hold on a fella in an actual game of rugby at this level. You'd see plenty at J3 level on a Sunday, but in a test match, never seen it. It's, you know, I think he's probably going to get a fairly hefty ban. Whether it'll affect his actual playing time next year or next season, I'm not sure, but. You know, it's not the kind of thing you want to see in rugby, you know. Like, we all want a bit of physicality. And do you know what? I have no problem with fellas throwing slaps at each other, really. Do you know what I mean? They'll get a ban or whatever. But, you know, when it comes to, like, chokeholds and stuff like that, isn't like, look, that stuff is no joke, you know. It was just headless. He just lost his head. Wales were playing, you know, playing very well other than that. I mean, Argentina are looking like they're no great shakes at the moment, you know. So I think we kind of have to take a little bit of a, little bit of a kind of a pinch of salt with Wales ranking at the moment, because Argentina had just, like we were saying there last week, they're just missing something, whatever it is. Wales were handy enough winners in the end, you know, and I'd say that I'm not sure if they're having a third. I think they're playing again this weekend against them. They should win that again. It should be a fairly handy 3-0 sweep for them. But, you know, they are developing some good players, of course. Owen Watkins, the guy you've been very impressed with. Josh Adams as well. But again, Wales look to be just putting away some good players, like the likes of Gethin Jenkins as well, some lads who are developing on and look to be in decent shape heading into 2019.
Yeah, the other games, Japan suffering defeat to Italy, so Italy leveled that series. There isn't a third test, so they share that 25-22 for the Italians. Canada suffered another defeat to Russia, and the Canadians have really fallen off the charts when it comes to rugby. They've been really, really poor lately. Hard to see where they're going to go. I know they still have, I think Canada still hold an outside chance of a repechage spot at the World Cup, but it's going to be tough. And of course, the game that we decided to brush off last week and to scoff at, United States versus Scotland. We were extremely dismissive, and it serves us right, Tom, because the United States pulled off a 30-29 win over the Scots, their first ever victory over a Tier 1 side. And AJ McGinty, formerly of Connacht, if I'm correct, was instrumental at our half.
Yeah, look, that's a huge disappointing loss for Scotland. You know, they'll be going on, they've got a few excuses built in. You know, the development tour, it was a very experimental 15. Ireland had a very experimental 15 there during the Lions tour and wiped the USA out twice. That should be, Scotland should not be losing that game. You know, I think I read Jared over the weekend that the USA hadn't actually won a game against Tier 1 opposition for something like 90 years in rugby, which is astounding. And it's amazing to think that Scotland could go over there, regardless of who they would pick, and lose that game. It's very disappointing for them. They'll be looking to try and come back again this weekend. But, you know, that's very disappointing. Like I said, there's not much redeemable. Fair play to the USA. There was some very good, like I said, there's some Irish lads playing for them. They played with grit. They played with plenty of, like, fire and physicality. The physicality has never really been a problem for them. It's just that managing a game and managing, the intricacies of it, Scotland just didn't show up, you know. And I think if Scotland had shown up, it would have beat them fairly handy. But fair play to the USA. They went and got an absolutely fantastic win against, you know, and nobody can ever take it away from them now, you know. So, like, they'd be absolutely delighted and, like, hopefully use it as something to build off. But even if they don't, a fantastic achievement.
Perfect, Tom. Of course, we will be back towards the end of the week with our the second part of our of the Breakdown podcast, or a new episode rather of the Breakdown podcast. This time, we'll be analysing the pools for the Champions Cup next season. So that's something to look forward to. But something else to look forward to, Tom. Tell us about what's coming up on the Three Red Kings platform between now and the end of the week.
Right, on patreon.com/3RedKings, I've got a couple of articles coming up this week. I've got one that's already up, which is the ruck scores from the game at the weekend. Who had the most amount of rucks, who impressed the most when it came to the breakdown as an individual. I've got one coming up later on this week about the little chances that Ireland missed in this game and how they can look to change, cut those out of the game for next week to get a kind of a maybe a healthier score. And I'll also be looking over the Monster group selection as well as podcasts, and I'll be doing a few other GIF articles once they spring to mind. So that's on patreon.com/FuriaKings for just €2 a month.
Tom, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about the pool draw?
Well, I'm certainly excited to end up being drawn in the same group as Leicester Tigers and Racing Metro again, and probably end up with it's basically a narrative group. So it's going to be Gigi probably, Herb Brandt will be coming back to Thomond Park, and you know, they'll be kept in headlines for weeks with that one. But I'm actually very excited about it. We were talking there before we went on air about how excited about the new season. Champions Cup draw is always exciting. I just hope we're going somewhere different, because the idea of heading off to Leicester again for a fourth season in a row is not something that I don't think I can take it. So we'll be looking to see how that goes. But yeah, very excited.
Yeah, I think our frequent flyer miles would be fairly high for the West Midlands if we were to keep going in that direction. It would be nice, of course, to pick it up as well, and to see some other parts of perhaps France France, the UK. So it would. Tom, that's pretty much it for this episode. We'll talk to you again on Thursday.
All right, talk to you again.
Back.
Be careful,
Ogara's
there
back.
It is. It's all on this. Bruno Nogara.